How bad will the drought in California get? Governor Brown has mandated a 25% reduction in water use, except for agriculture, which uses up to 80% of the state's water. Will this set up a battle royale between farmers out in the valleys and city residents by the sea? Oh, wait, that already happened.
Gentlemen, today you can walk out that door, turn right, hop a street car, and within 25 minutes end up smack in the Pacific Ocean. Now, you can swim in it and you can fish in it, but you can't drink it, and you can't irrigate an orange grove with it. Now, remember, we live next door to the ocean, but we also live on the edge of a desert. Los Angeles is a desert community. Beneath this building, beneath our streets, is a desert. And without water, the dust will rise up and cover us as though we never existed.
Ah, the fabulous opening scene from the 1974 film Chinatown, in which the fictional Los Angeles mayor makes the case for building an aqueduct to bring water from farm areas to the city. The water commissioner refuses to build a dam because one has already collapsed. He's murdered. There's an evil plot to take the water by buying up farmland, and Faye Dunaway is hiding a terrible secret. Well, except for the Faye Dunaway part, which becomes a metaphor maybe for the rape of the land. Chinatown is loosely based on a true Los Angeles story, and its mood of drought-induced anxiety and dread feels more relevant than ever. Kevin Starr is a professor of history at the University of Southern California. We want to talk to him about that very real history. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Robin, I'm delighted to be here.
And tell us more about this film. What did it get right? There was a water commissioner. There was a plot to bring water. So what more is true?
Well, what Robert Town did with the script was he took the drama of the 1890s and early 1900s, because after all, the water of the Owens River reached Los Angeles in October 1913, and he moved it up for stylistic purposes into the late 20s and early 1930s. But the essential truth about the struggle for water and the politics of water, that is essentially true.
Well, there really was a water commissioner by the name of Mulholland. There's a famous road that's named after him. There really was a plan to bring water. Tell us more about that.
Well, Mulholland and Fred Eaton, they knew that Los Angeles would have to get a water supply if it was to grow into, even to survive, much less grow into a great city. And they went out into the desert, and they researched the route for an aqueduct to bring Owens River water into Los Angeles. In fact, they used to say that the trail of discarded whiskey bottles from their wagon was the way that the aqueduct followed back into Los Angeles. And October 1913, that water reached the city.
So the architects of this idea put pressure on farmers in the valley to sell their land so that they could build the aqueduct. And then there's this sense that it was rigged, that there were people who knew that certain land would double in value because water was going to reach it. I want to listen to another scene from the movie. And this is when the Jack Nicholson character, again a private eye, confronts Noah Cross, played by John Huston. Now, film scholars have called him kind of the darker side of the real Mulholland. Get the water, enrich yourself, no matter what the cost. Here's that scene.
There's going to be a lot of irate citizens when they find out that they're paying for water that they're not going to get.
Oh, that's all taken care of. See, Mr. Gibbs, either you bring the water to L.A. or you bring L.A. to the water.
How are you going to do that?
By incorporating the valley into the city. Simple as that.
So, Professor, here you hear about the scheming, the Machiavellian scheming that went on to ensure.
Well, I think, although elements of Noah Cross do reflect some parts of Mulholland, Mulholland was absolutely committed to bringing water to Los Angeles with a passion that was almost fanatical. Mulholland himself never got rich this way. He was a civil servant, died literally in office. Noah Cross takes into consideration he has more of that secret syndicate of investors buying up these property quietly, knowing that when water arrived, their investment would quadruple, quintuple, whatever.
Yeah. Are there still bruised feelings from these Chinatown days?
Well, they were more than bruised feelings, Robin, because by the 1920s, the farmers of the Owens Valley, having been deprived of their water and having their farmlands turned into arid dust, began a campaign of dynamiting the aqueduct. You had a kind of insurgency against the aqueduct lasting through the mid to late 20s. It was eventually put down. Present-day California, we're not to the point of blowing up aqueducts,
right,
but we're being faced with something that California faces in regular successive plateaus of understanding. Number one is that Mother Nature never intended 38 million, pushing towards 40 million, to be in this present confines of California. In Native American period, at the most, there were 350,000. When these great water projects were initiated in the early 20th century, California had just slightly more than 3 million people. At each point, Californians have had to face the fact, well, how much growth can you engineer through water, and at what point does the system begin to collapse?
What do you think the answer is?
Well, I think the answer is that it won't collapse. Just as we invented ourselves through water, through great irrigation projects, we have to also reinvent ourselves now through the process of coming to a proper usage of water.
Yeah. Do you worry, as others do, that people may not want to bring industry to a state where you can only shower for 5 minutes or can't have a lawn that might mean that much to somebody?
Well, the lawn is an elegant importation from England, and it's made a guest appearance out here in the semi-arid West. But I take my direction from Stanford University, which when it was being designed and built in the late 1880s, early 1890s, sent the eminent horticulturist H.S. Codman over to North Africa, Egypt, the water-scorched southern Mediterranean, which so resembles California, to bring back the plants and flourishing shrubs and trees of that region to plant on the Stanford campus, which today, 120 years later, is Garden of the West. We're going to reorient ourselves towards a Mediterranean garden, a tradition. This will take some time.
I want to ask you to comment on one other thing. Today, the debate is about some people, when we talked to a golf industry spokesperson, questioning whether the agriculture industry has too much water. Back in the Chinatown day, the film and the real-life story that it tells, the farmers were the ones having water taken from them. What do you think happens now with some of that, what sounds like resentment of agriculture?
Well, that's a very interesting point, because the produce of California, made possible by the water engineering projects you describe, changed the American diet, introduced into the American diet a whole range of fresh fruits and vegetables, citrus products. Think of the orange juice craze of the 1920s. Just as we're talking about Chinatown, I think in one of the scenes they're drinking beautiful orange juice at the table, which projects the fact that the whole American diet was enlivened, enriched, and made more healthy because of California produce. We produce towards 300 products here in California, and maybe the nation will decide that it will deal with less endive, but I don't think it's going to deal with less healthy fruits and vegetables. I still think that Thomas Jefferson always advised this country, don't quit your day job, i.e. don't deny the agricultural basis of a culture and the necessity for agriculture to provide for the survival of a society.
One last question. Again, thinking of Chinatown, I'm wondering how you view that film now, given everything that's going on now.
It's more timely than ever. I suspect it's going to experience, it's never gone out of fashion. I mean, it's always been considered a great film. I suspect, just as the way you're doing it now, Robin, it's going to provide a kind of text for guidance into this dilemma that California now once again is facing regarding its water past, present, and future.
But is it a cautionary tale, or is it a triumphant tale of the water that was brought to make L.A. the great city that it is?
Well, I think that's a wonderful question, because at the end, doesn't Noah say it's the future, that water made the future possible. Well, that future that he talked about in the film, at a time when California had just barely over towards 5 million people, that future is going to reach certain natural population limits. And if we price water correctly, the population of California will stabilize in the time to come. But at the same time, those who predict the demise of California because of its current water challenge have to remember that we ran out of electricity in the early 2000s and we prevailed, and then we ran out of money about 6 years ago and we seem to have prevailed, and we're running out of water and we're going to learn to use it better and to conserve the water that we have.
Kevin Starr, professor of history at the University of Southern California, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Robin.